If you want to follow along in your Bibles in our lesson, I encourage you to do so. We're going to begin in the book of Numbers, chapter 13. Book of Numbers, chapter 13. Good to see everyone out here this morning. And I know, as Will mentioned earlier, the flu and the colds have been ravaging our congregation. And it's nice to see most of you back. There are a few who are still affected by it and aren't here this morning, but we're glad to see most everybody back and on the healthy track. And if you're visiting with us this morning, I would like to add my word of welcome to you. Appreciate your presence here with us and hope that you will be encouraged by our services together this morning. On Wednesday evening, about a week and a half ago, in the second installment of our great chapters class that we've been doing on Wednesday evening, we studied Numbers chapter 14. And of course, the theme of that chapter is Israel's disobedience. It's a great chapter because we get to see again the contrast between those who are disobedient and those who are obedient, those who are faithless and those who are faithful, and we see God's response to that. But in the midst of Israel's disobedience and faithlessness, there stood two men who remained firmly faithful to the Lord. Joshua is the first of those men, the eventual leader of Israel, the eventual one who would take Israel into the promised land after Moses died, ultimately leads them to the conquest of that land, the promised land that God had given to them and had shown them. Joshua, such a major character in the Old Testament, even has a book of the Bible named for him, as we read of all the conquests of the promised land in the book of Joshua. But there was another man who stood just as faithful and confident as Joshua, and that is Caleb. Caleb is far lesser known, and there's far less print, less written about him in the Scriptures, and yet he is singled out as a man with a different spirit in him. And I want to take a look this morning at the person of Caleb and the man who had a different spirit at the time of Israel's unfaithfulness. I'm going to begin by setting the scene. And in this story, when we go back to Numbers chapter 13, we see that Israel is ready to enter the promised land. It's a little bit more than a year after God had brought them out of Egypt. He had shown them mighty wonders and His power in the plagues upon Egypt, and had shown them His power by bringing them through the Red Sea and causing the Red Sea to collapse back on Egypt, and had shown him His power by providing everything they needed in the wilderness. He had given them the law at Mount Sinai. He had brought them safely to the edge of the Promised Land a little bit over a year later, and now they were ready to go into the Promised Land that God had promised to give them. And so they are told to send spies into the land to find out about the land, to find out if it was exactly as God had told them. And so there were 12 spies that went into the land. There was one from each tribe of Israel that entered into the land to spy it out. And Caleb was one of those spies. He represented the tribe of Judah. And so after the spies are in the land for 40 days, they report back to the children of Israel. It tells us in verse 25 of chapter 13, they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And so they bring back their report, and the first thing they say is, the land is good. The land is good. They told them, we went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. They brought back grape clusters that were so large they had to be carried on a stick between two men, and said, this is what they have in the land. The land is good, just as God had told us. However, nevertheless, the people are strong. The people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, the descendants of Anak are there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea along the banks of the Jordan. And so they begin to paint a picture of a land that they're not able to take. Yes, the land is good. The land is flowing with milk and honey. But the people there are strong and there's no way we can take it. But Caleb intercedes. Verse 30, it says, Caleb quieted the people before Moses. So we can see that this report that the spies brought back had caused the people to become in an uproar. They begin to worry. They begin to panic. God has brought us out here to go into a land of people who are giants with fortified cities. And Caleb quiets the people. And he says, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are able, well able, to overcome it. And later, in chapter 14 and verse 24, it tells us that Caleb was a man with a different spirit. A different spirit. And so I want to look this morning at the spirit of the Israelites and compare and contrast that with the spirit of Caleb, and then take a look at ourselves and see where we fall. The spirit of the others. When we go back to Numbers chapter 14, in verse 9, this is where Joshua and Caleb have stood up to speak to the children of Israel. The children of Israel are in a panic. It tells us that the congregation lifted up their voices and they cried and they wept all that night because of the report that the 10 of the 12 spies had brought back. That the people in the land are too great, they're too strong, the cities are fortified, there's no way we can go into the land and take the land. And so the congregation is in an uproar. They begin to say things like, why couldn't we have just died in Egypt? Or why couldn't God have just let us die in the wilderness? If only we could go back to Egypt, at least we'd have something to eat. We know what went on in Egypt. We know what we could do in Egypt. We don't know what's ahead of us in this land. In fact, they even went so far as to say, let's select another leader. Obviously, Moses and Aaron don't know what they're doing. Let's select another leader who will take us back to Egypt, back into slavery. Now, they didn't say that. But that's what they were wishing for. That's what they were asking for. To go back into the slavery that God had just redeemed us from a little over a year ago. And so Joshua and Caleb stand up, and beginning in verse 7, they say to the children of Israel, the land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. And so in verse 9, we see the spirit of the people. Only do not rebel against the Lord. And so when we look at the spirit of the people of Israel, the first thing we can see about those people is that they were a rebellious people. They were rebellious. They refused to take the land that God had promised to give to them. Do we understand that? God had promised to give them the land. And yet they refused to go in and take the land. The people are strong. We're not able. We can't do this. We're not able to go into the land and take it. And at some level, they were right. By themselves, they were not able. But what they were showing was their rebellion against God. The God who had promised them to take them into the land. The God who had shown them His power. The God who had shown them His might over the last year, as He sustained them in the wilderness, as He had brought them out of the land of Egypt. And they rebelled against that God. Secondly, when we look at the spirit of the people of Israel, Joshua and Caleb say to them, only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land. The spirit of the people of Israel was that they were a fearful people. They were afraid of the people in the land. They were afraid of what they were going to be facing if they went into the land. The descendants of Anak are there. We know that the giants are there. We've seen the people. We are like grasshoppers in their eyes. We're afraid to do this. The people are strong. not recognizing, of course, the strength of the one who was with them, the strength of the one who had brought them out with a mighty hand. We've been studying the book of Exodus in our Sunday morning class. And when God appears to Moses in the burning bush and speaks to Moses and tells Moses his reason for appearing to him, that he was going to be the one who would go back to Egypt, that God had heard the cries of his people, and that he was sending Moses back to Egypt so that he could stand before Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh to let his people go. Moses' first objection was, well, who am I? Who am I to go back to Egypt and stand before Pharaoh? And it's interesting how God answers that objection. God doesn't lay out all the reasons God chose him. God doesn't say, well, remember, you were brought up in the house of Pharaoh. So you are an Egyptian, essentially, because you lived with him for 40 years. But you're also an Israelite, because you were born a Hebrew. You were brought up in your mother's arms. You were taught the ways of the Hebrews. You understood who your people were, and even at 40 years old, decided you might be ready to lead your people out. He didn't tell him all of those reasons. He didn't say those things. When Moses said, "Who am I?" God essentially said to him, "It doesn't matter." What God said was, "I will be with you. I will be with you." That's all Moses needed to hear. Well, at least it should have been all he needed to hear. And so here we are, standing at the edge of the promised land, and the people look at the people in the promised land, and they say, we can't do it. We're afraid. But what has God said to Israel all along? I will be with you. What did Joshua and Caleb say to the people of Israel? God will be with you. God will be with us. If we have favor in God's eyes, we can do it. It doesn't matter how strong the cities are. It doesn't matter how big the people are. Our God is infinitely bigger and stronger than that. But they were fearful. And ultimately what they were was faithless. They were faithless. Do not fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. The Lord is with us. They did not believe that God could or would deliver upon His promise. They had lost faith that God would or could do what He said He would do. And so what was the spirit of Caleb? God says of Caleb in verse 24 of chapter 14, "But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it." Caleb had a different spirit than the people of Israel. And what was his spirit? His spirit was obedient. Obedient. He wanted to take possession of the land. Back in chapter 13, when he first quiets the people, chapter 13 and verse 30, Caleb quiets the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession." God has brought us here for the purpose of taking possession of the land. Why wouldn't we take possession? How black and white can he be? God said, "Let's do it. Let's go do it." He was obedient, willing to take it on. Let's go up at once. Why hesitate? I know you find this hard to believe, but sometimes our children don't do exactly what we say right when we tell them to do it. It's rare, but it happens occasionally. And one of the things we say to them is, if you obey me 10 minutes after I've told you to do it, that's not really obedience. If I tell you to do something and do it, and I need you to do it now, and you do it 10 minutes from now, it's not really obedience. And you may look back and go, well, I did what you told me, but it's not obedience. And look at how Caleb responds here. Let us go up at once and take possession of the land. God has brought us here for this purpose, has told us to go in. Why would we even hesitate? He was ready and obedient. Secondly, he was courageous. He was courageous. He showed no fear of the people of the land. The people of Israel said, look at the people that are in there. They're bigger than we are. They're stronger than we are. There's so many of them. We're afraid. We are not able to go up against the people, for they're stronger than we are. But what does Caleb say? We are well able to overcome it. We are well able to overcome it. Now, was this just foolish bravado? Was this just arrogance or pride on Caleb's part? Was he thinking, I'm the best warrior ever and I'm able to go in there and defeat all these people by myself? Come on with me. Of course not. Of course not. But he was not afraid because he knew who was with him. He was courageous because he knew the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob, who had promised them this land, would fight for them. Caleb was not only courageous, but he was faithful. He believed God would fulfill this promise. He believed that what God said would come true. Looking ahead in chapter 14 again, when Joshua and Caleb are speaking to the Israelites after the night of crying out to God. In verse 8, if the Lord delights in us, then He will bring us into this land and give it to us. Why was he able to say that with such confidence? Because he had faith in God. He understood that when God makes a promise, God delivers. That God wasn't going to promise them the land, bring them to the land, and then go, uh-oh, these people are a lot bigger than I thought, and their cities are a lot more fortified than I thought. Maybe I shouldn't have made that promise. We do that sometimes, don't we? I promise I'm going to make this happen, and then we get there, and there are obstacles and roadblocks, and we go, oh, probably shouldn't have made that promise. But that's because we're limited, right? God is not limited. God is not limited in what He can do. And therefore, when He promises, we know that He can and will fulfill it. And so, let's put up a little graph here so that we can see them side by side. The spirit of the Israelites was rebellious. We can't. We're not going to go into the land. The spirit of Caleb, obedient. Let's go. Let's take possession now. God has told us, let's go. The spirit of the others, fearful. They were afraid of the people in the land. Too many obstacles to overcome. We can't do it. The spirit of Caleb, courageous. There was no fear of the people in the land because he knew who would fight with him and for him. And the spirit of the others, faithless. Faithless. God should have just killed us in Egypt or killed us in the wilderness. Why would He bring us here to die at the hands of these people? Caleb says, we will take it. And so the question I leave us with today that I want to study for a few minutes or consider for a few minutes is, what is my spirit? Is my spirit like that of the Israelites, disobedient, fearful and faithless? Or is my spirit like that of Caleb's, obedient, courageous, and faithful? Is my spirit like the majority of the people in this world around me? Or is my spirit different, like Caleb's? Do I have a rebellious spirit? Do I simply do what I want to do when I want to do it? Do I make decisions in my life based on what's I think is best for me right here and now and what I really like and want? If that's the case, that's a rebellious spirit. When my desires and my wants and my will comes first, And when it bumps up against God's will, it's like, eh, that's not that important. And that's a rebellious spirit. Do I obey God, but only when I agree with Him? Well, I don't feel like killing anybody today, so I, you know, that's killing's probably not a good idea. So, yeah, God, that's a good law. I like that. But this whole not looking upon a woman to lust after her, I don't know that I like that one. Maybe we'll set that one aside for now. Well, I don't really want to cheat on my wife, and I like her a lot, and I can see the problems that might cause in my family. So, God, that's a good law. So I'm going to stay faithful to my wife. But it sure would save me on my taxes if I just fudged the numbers a little bit and lied here and there. So we'll set that law aside. When we obey God, when we obey God simply because we agree with Him, I think it's a good idea, that's not really obedience, is it? That's rebelling against God. So is my spirit rebellious or is my spirit obedient? Do I seek God's will in whatever I find myself in? Do I make decisions in my life based on what God's will is for my life? Do I make decisions about what I'm doing next and where I'm going based on whether or not I can be obedient and faithful to God in those circumstances? That's what it means to be obedient. Do I hear what God says and make a change based on what I hear? Or do I go, well, maybe I need to look at that a little closer and see if I can't argue my way out of it? Well, maybe that doesn't really say what it means, what it seems like it means. Maybe that's not what it really means. Is my spirit disobedient or obedient? What about fear? Do I have a fearful spirit? Am I afraid to stand for what is right? And let me tell you, it's only going to get more and more difficult in this society. And we see that because we have a society now that is fulfilling what Isaiah prophesied thousands of years ago, and he wasn't talking about today, but we see those things very oftentimes repeat themselves. Woe to you when you call evil good and good evil. That's all around us, isn't it? And in fact, what happens when you stand up for what's right? You get called some pretty bad names, don't you? That's one of the tactics of evil, right? Is to paint those who are good as the ones who are evil and even make up words and names to call you so that you feel bad about doing what's right. And so are we afraid to stand up for what's right because somebody may call us a name? Or because it has to go against the flow? Do we easily follow after others because it's takes too much courage to do otherwise? Remember, Jesus said, broad and easy is the way that leads to destruction. That doesn't take any thinking, it doesn't take any courage, it doesn't take any strength on our part to get in the flow and just go. It's easy to hop on that train that's going 100 miles an hour toward destruction. Doesn't take any effort or any work or any thinking on our part. The difficult thing is to get into that narrow way. Jesus said, narrow and difficult is the way that leads to life. And so are we easily following others because we're afraid of what people might think of us? Are we afraid of what people might say about us? Are we afraid of how we might not fit in with the right crowd? Are we afraid maybe that we might lose our livelihood? Or are we courageous like Caleb? Caleb said, we can do it. We can do it. Are we willing to stand in the minority? 12 spies went into the land. 10 spies came out and said, we can't do it. It had been real easy for the other two to go, you know, they're right. Especially once the 10 spies whipped up the crowd and all of Israel cried and complained and moaned all night long. It would have been real easy for the two to say, they may be right. But they didn't. They stood up in the face of the crowd and said, we can do it. They had the courage to stand up against the majority. Am I faithless? Am I doubtful of what God has promised to me? Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. He doesn't promise me a mansion. He doesn't promise me a luxury car. But He says, I'll take care of you. You'll have food to eat every day. You'll have a place to shelter your head. Do I believe that? Do I fully believe that God can make good on His promises? Am I faithless or am I faithful? Am I confident in God's ability to fulfill His word? Travis read for us from Joshua chapter 14 this morning. Most of the lesson comes from Numbers 13 and 14, but the rest of the story can be found in Joshua chapter 14. Caleb's not mentioned a lot in the Scriptures. Primarily, he's in Numbers 13 and 14, and his name may be scattered a couple other times, but the next time we come upon Caleb is as they're entering into the Promised Land, or as they've been battling in the Promised Land for a while. And we see what happens in Joshua 14. Caleb lives to enter into the Promised Land. Remember, God punished the disobedience and the faithlessness and the fearfulness of the people of Israel and said, all over the age of 20 are going to perish in the wilderness except for two, Joshua and Caleb. And Joshua became the one who would lead them into the land, and Caleb is one who fought also in getting the land. And it's amazing to look at this story when Caleb is now 85 years old and to see what Caleb was like. Caleb lived to enter into the Promised Land just as God had promised him. Remember, we read a few moments ago from Numbers 14:24 where it says, Caleb was a man with a different spirit. You will enter the land. And so now we get to read what that is like. At 85 years old, his strength was still with him. As yet I am strong, as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. How many of y'all at 85 would like to be as strong as you were at 35 or 40? I'd like to be as strong as I was at 35 or 40, now at 53. It's just not there, right? Playing football about a year and a half ago with my niece's new husband, who's like 23. And we were playing, and I caught a pass on the sideline and thought, okay, he's faster than I am. I understand that. But I'm going to get most of the way to the end zone. Just kick it in that next gear and go. Next gear isn't there anymore. That gear I had just a few years before was no longer there. There was no next gear. He was on me in about three steps. It's a little frustrating, a little, you know, but it's not there. And so imagine here, Caleb at 85 years old saying, I'm just as strong now as I was when Moses sent me in the land 45 years ago. His strength was still with him. His courage was still with him. Look at what he says in verse 12. Now therefore give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day. For you heard in that day the Anakim were there, the giants. And those cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me. I love that. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. He had the courage still at 85 to say, give me this mountain. This is what I'm going to take. And of course, his faith was still with him. He understood if he was going to take that mountain, it was because God was with him. And God rewarded him. Joshua blessed him, verse 13, and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, as an inheritance. Hebron, therefore, became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, to this day, because he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. Caleb was a man of a different spirit. He wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. And we see how that turned out in his life. He was blessed because he was obedient, he was courageous, and he was faithful. What is my spirit? What is your spirit? Do we have a different spirit from those around us? I pray this morning that each of us do, that we look to the example of Caleb and we see the strength of his spirit and how God rewarded him for it. If you're not a Christian, you need to be one. God has made great promises to those who are His. And as we talked about in our Exodus class this morning, God is not a used car salesman. He doesn't say, become a Christian, your life will be perfect. Because that's not the case. Jesus said, they hated me, they're going to hate you. Jesus said, count the cost. But what He offers is far beyond anything that we could experience in this life. Paul said, I consider the sufferings that I've suffered for the Lord to be nothing. And Paul suffered far more ever than any of us will, when compared to the glories that await me. If you're not sure what you need to do to become a Christian and receive those promises of God, come talk to us. We'll sit down with our Bibles and study those things with you. But if you know what you need to do and you're ready to do those things this morning, I encourage you to come forward as we stand to sing our hymn of encouragement.